Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres. Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And 51551 Marshans and Joe at RTE. Just as Ray's friend Darren contacted us and to raise the issue of the hit and run, and then Ray himself was talking to us before the break. Aoife, who's not a real name, Aoife's friend Laura contacted us about Aoife, and then we'll be talking to Laura shortly, but we also start talking to Aoife. Aoife, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. And Laura contacted us. She's on a campaign because she wants you to get residential inpatient care for your eating disorder.
Yeah, that's correct.
Do you want to tell us what you're going through, Aoife? Because it's not helped by the pandemic, to say the least.
Yeah, I suppose it all kind of started off recently. Well, the whole kind of campaign, I suppose I've had the eating disorder for about 12 years. But it just kind of, like, it's been severe for quite a number of years. But really kind of during the lockdown, particularly lockdown three, it was just kind of one level too many for me, or one kind of factor too many, that it just kind of pushed me over the edge. And I kind of got to a point where I had just totally given up and attempted to take my own life. And then so I moved back in with family, and you know, my family and friends were all there. They were all really supportive, and they were, you know, asking me, like, I suppose just to explain to them, like, really what it is that I kind of would experience day to day, and the things that I'm doing to myself, because eating disorders are very difficult to understand if you don't have them or have one. So I had written kind of a document, really, I suppose, that kind of just outlined the typical kind of day of the things that I would be doing to myself every day. And so I shared that with them. And then a friend put it up online anonymously, just to basically as a cry for help, just to say, you know, can anyone do anything? Like, we need to get her in somewhere, because, to be honest, I think this will kill me if I don't find a way to overcome it. And then from there on, you know, people have been, you know, getting in touch with that friend through Twitter, just saying, is there anything I can do? A few TDs have been in touch to say that they'll try their best, but there's no guarantees, really. So I've been kind of pretty much begging the mental health services for a long time to try and give me a bit more than kind of the typical outpatient kind of once a week therapy, because it just doesn't seem to work for me.
And Aoife, how long have you had a dysfunctional relationship with food?
I can think back to childhood, really. I didn't have an eating disorder in childhood, but I had a very dysfunctional relationship with food in childhood, and all throughout my teenage years, the kind of crash dieting. Like, I was always very thin. I'm still very petite. But the crash dieting started when I was a teenager, and the starving and the kind of milkshake diets, all that kind of stuff. And then it kind of crossed the line into bulimia when I was kind of 18.
And you say that the pandemic, because of the fact that you're working at home or based at home, the pandemic can hide your dysfunctional relationship with food. Explain that.
I suppose, you know, as it's been very severe now, you know, for, as I said, I've had it for about 12 years, but it's been very severe for about five of those years, the last 5 years. But, you know, I'd go into college or I'd go into work, and you'd have the distraction of other people there you know, they wouldn't know what was going on, of course, but just, you know, I'd have moments throughout the day of, you know, just really getting to just feel and act like a normal person. But, you know, since working from home, it's just, it's taken it to a new level where it's very easy, it's much easier to kind of get away with all the things I'm doing. So it's basically 24/7 now of either eating everything and getting sick and taking laxatives, or not eating anything. Just a constant kind of kind of draw towards that form of self-harm as well. It's always there. So, you know, and I suppose that I'm working from home in my bedroom as well. So I'm in my bedroom, like I'm working, sleeping, eating, everything in my bedroom. So it's just hit a level that I didn't think it could, really. I didn't think it could get worse before the lockdown, but it's just, it kind of set,
Because you're at home, you can, and in one sense, you're not being observed or watched in that sense. You can order takeaways. You can order whatever food.
That's it. I'm averaging now about 3 takeaways a day on top of like several visits to shop. These are the days that I'm eating. Like there's some days where I won't eat anything. But on top of kind of like several visits then to the local shops, just like buying so much food I can barely carry it. Like, you know, and then kind of getting home, eating it all. So kind of, I wouldn't even taste half of it, to be honest. Like, it's just so furious, like, the kind of the pace at which I'm eating. It's like, I just can't stop. And then I'll eat until I literally feel like my stomach is just going to burst. Like, I can barely breathe sometimes. There's so much food in me. And then I'll, like, force myself to get sick. Oh, and God. I'd be dizzy then because, you know, like, it's a really horrible way to live. And that kind of has, that, like, it's just constant at this point. Like, some days I'll start at 9 o'clock in the morning. Other days, I'll be able to kind of push it off until about 11 or 12 in the day, but I'll still be there kind of 1 or 2 in the morning, still going. Or sometimes I'll get to sleep, and then if I wake up at 4 or 5 in the morning, it'll just start again. And to be honest, it's so bad at this point, I don't even feel like I'm doing it. I feel like it's I suppose the best way to describe it is that I'm kind of like a passenger in a car that's kind of going 200 kilometres down the motorway and I can't stop it.
You feel powerless.
Yeah, like sometimes, like I'd have like cuts in my mouth and ulcers and stuff, you know, and it would be so painful to actually eat and my jaw would be literally like throbbing with pain, but I still can't stop. And sometimes I'm even like crying to myself, saying to myself, you know, like, please don't, just stop, don't do it, just go to sleep, like, try and stop. But I just can't. It's like my body is just doing it and I'm nearly asking myself to stop, but I just can't. And like, I'm at a point now where, you know, like, I've lost teeth over this. You know, like, the purging is so forceful, sometimes I'll have, like, there'll be blood coming out, and it's such a horrible way to live, and I can't seem to stop.
Yeah, that's your reason why, one of the reason you're going public. I'll talk to you after the break about what help you're getting and what help you need. I'm talking to Aoife, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We were contacted by Laura, who's Aoife's friend, not their real names, about Aoife's eating disorder and her campaign or plea to get help. Aoife, tell us what help you are getting at the moment and what help you think you need.
So I suppose I'd just like to preface this, Joe, by saying, you know, eating disorders are difficult because they're one of the few disorders or illnesses that will convince you that you don't need help. And then when you're getting help, it will start to tell you, no, don't go in, don't engage. So I've been kind of in and out of the mental health services, the outpatient ones for years. Generally what happens is you're put on a waiting list to speak to a consultant, then you eventually get to the consult and you're speaking with kind of the consultant psychiatrist, and then you're put on a waiting list that usually is quite a good few months for outpatient treatment, and that's kind of like kind of an hour a week therapy. I've tried very hard to engage in outpatient therapy over the years, and I've you know, I've worked with loads of different therapists. And the only way I can try to describe it is, you know, I'd be in the waiting room sometimes waiting to go in to see the psychiatrist or the psychologist, and I'd be eating in the waiting room and going then and getting sick in the toilets, and then going into my therapy session and then coming back out and just resuming, picking up where I left off. And with something like, I don't know if any of your listeners have read the document that I wrote. It's posted online, but when it's that severe, it's kind of, I'm just in a hurricane, and an hour a week, like, yeah. I just can't control it by myself. So I've spent hours in psychiatrists meetings and with psychologists, asking them, is there any way I can get into a residential facility just to help me just break the cycle? And they, for the last kind of since the beginning, they've always said, no, the HSE, we don't have public beds, that all the residential facilities are they're private. So what happened then was, about a year ago, I called one of these residential facilities just to ask, to basically beg them. I was kind of saying, look, I know you're private, but is there anything at all that you can do? Like, I'm going to die. And to be honest, Joe, there's a big part of me, like, I'd rather die than live through another minute of this, to be honest. But there is, obviously there's a bit of a fight in me, which is why I'm doing all this now. And that, I was speaking with a clinical nurse in that residential facility, and she said all of the treatment centres in Ireland have 2 to 3 public beds that the HSE fund people to go into. And I was very upset, because I've lost count of the amount of times I've asked public psychiatrist to help get me in somewhere. So what happened then was, I went to my consultant in Cork, my psychiatrist, and I said to him, look, I've been in touch with these treatment centres, I know there are beds, can you please just help me to get in? And actually the clinical nurse in the treatment centre said, I said, how can I get one of the beds? And she said, look, she said, I know it's not great, but she said the way it works is that it's the consultant that shouts the loudest and makes the best case for their patient. So I said to him, I said, look, will you please apply for this funding on my behalf from the HSE to get me in? And what he said was, he said, Lisa, looking at your history, you have a long history of engaging and disengaging, and he said, I don't think you're motivated enough to get for me to make that application for you, which, to be honest, Joe, was actually devastating to hear, because sometimes the only motivation I can gather is to turn up to an appointment. Do you know what I mean? And for someone to sit there and say, I'm not going to advocate for you because I don't think you want the help.
Okay, we have to treat... We won't go into details about the actual consultations, but you sound, Aoife, that description earlier on, that you're a passenger in the car and you're looking at what's happening to you, even though you're the driver, so to speak.
Yeah.
And but your analysis is so perceptive that it looks like you're almost hovering above yourself, looking down on yourself and saying, this is what I need to do, this is what I need, this is what I'm doing. Because you've incredible insight, it seems to me.
I suppose, like, I'm, 12 years at it now, and I generally do like to kind of try and take a step back and look at my own behaviours and my own thought patterns. But there's this kind of idea that awareness is in and of itself curative. But for me, I'm very aware. Like, I'm in no denial that the things I'm doing to myself are very harmful. But the awareness doesn't seem to help. I just can't stop. And it's just like living a completely secret life. It's like I've two lives, so I'd be, kind of binging and purging and stuff up in my room into like bags, actually. I have to resort to getting sick into bags, and then I'll go downstairs on a call to work and I'll be chatting away to colleagues as if nothing was wrong, and then the second the call ends, I'm just back at it again.
And I know we've mentioned before, and they've been on the program before, and people have gone to them, BodyWise, which is BodyWhys, BodyWhys.ie, are a very, very good organisation. Stay with us, Aoife. Joe at RT.ie. Roisin Doyle. Roisin, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
What Aoife is saying resonates with you, I'm told.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, just listening to Aoife, I could, like, every word she said, I could, like, totally relate to.
And what are you open to help, Roisin?
Yeah, like, I'd be very much in the same boat. Like, I want to get better so badly. Like, I would, like, I remember somebody once said to me, I said, I don't really care if I die from this disease. Like, I'm so, unhappy living this way. And she said, you don't want to die, you just don't want to continue living the way you're living now.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how it feels. Like, I so badly want to get better and I want a life without this disease, but it feels impossible.
And when did your dysfunctional relationship with food begin, Roisin? I know I see in your text or your message, you're 21, Aoife is 30. When did your dysfunctional relationship with food begin, Roisin?
I was very similar to Aoife. Like, all throughout my life, I had a very dysfunctional relationship with food. Like, when I was 16, I was probably a little bit different because I was obese. And I always kind of binge ate in secret. I was very, like, secretive when it came to, like, my eating behaviours. And okay. I always found it difficult to, like, put my knife and fork down when I was a child.
Okay. You were told to put your knife and fork down?
No, I found it difficult.
Oh, you found it difficult? Sorry, I thought you were being... Don't give me actual weights or anything like that, please. But would you have been very conscious of your weight?
Yeah, I was... growing up, I was very self-conscious of how much I weighed. Like, okay. I would have been teased about it. And, yeah, I wasn't happy with myself from, like, a young age.
Yeah. And how long can you say that you've been suffering from an eating disorder?
I would say 5 years. I developed it when I was 16 after losing my nan. So.
Then what effect has it had on your body since?
Similar to Aoife, I've lost teeth. The oral issues are quite hard. Like, I have a stomach condition now, and I get really bad, like, acid reflux and, like, sores on my mouth, and obviously, like, loss of, like, a menstrual cycle and losing hair and joint pain, and I suffered seizures in the past.
Yeah. And we have a statement in from the HSE. Now, it's a long statement, but this is a quick presse of it, I'm told. The HSE say they aim to have 8 adult and 8 child adolescent teams available, but they only have 3 up and running, 2 child teen teams and 1 adult team. Have you been able to reach out for help, Roisin, and what's been the result?
Yeah, I've actually been in Lewis Bridges twice.
Okay, that's the inpatient unit in Dublin,
I've...
It's private, isn't it?
It's private, yeah. So I was there under, like, my healthcare, like, layoff.
Okay.
So you only get a certain amount of time. And right. I don't really believe that there's a certain amount of days that a person can, like, it's like this pressure to recover really fast.
And it
doesn't work that way. So I've been able to reach out for help, but, like, as Aoife said, like, when you're getting 1 hour a week and, like, your behaviours are consuming your whole day and they're so out of control, it's kind of like watching a train wreck, and you're going to these, like, appointments and you're still engaging behaviours and you don't really have the cognition to kind of engage properly because you're so focused on, like, you know, being malnourished, like, not feeling well.
I know it's a difficult question and shouldn't be asked of you, but what help do you think would make a difference, Roisin?
To be quite honest, I think that's the issue. Like, I don't really have an answer for myself or for anybody else. I've been unsuccessful in inpatient in the past.
So far. Whereas Aoife believes she does need inpatient treatment to try and break the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And your family, Roisin, they aware of it?
They're definitely aware of it. My mom is incredibly supportive. Like, she's never given up on me. She's very, I think throughout the years of dealing with it, she's learned so much about the illness.
Yeah.
So she's able to, like, detach me from the disease because, like, it's very hard to do that sometimes. Like, it's hard to maintain relationships when, like, you're struggling so much, like, physically and mentally.
Yeah. Well, the two of you stay with us, please, Aoife and Roisin. I'm also going to talk to Laura, who it was Roisin who contacted us herself, but it was Laura who contacted us on behalf of Aoife. Joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Done. Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro with a range up to 455 kilometres.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And more in the HSE statement about the issue that's been raised by Aoife and indeed Roisin, both of whom are suffering from eating disorders, and both of whom are looking for help in different ways. The HSE say since 2016, 5.7 million has been made available for eating disorders. Of that, 1.77 million has been invested to date in eating disorder specialist posts. The balance of 3.94 million remains fully available to invest in specialist eating disorder posts in 2021. And another line from the same: the availability of skilled staff is a significant issue in mental health services where demand outstrips supply. Now, Aoife, did you mention, are you studying psychology?
I did.
You did? And yeah. Roisin, what are you studying?
Psychology.
Okay. Why are you laughing, Roisin?
This is ironic. Yeah, it is. Joe, can I just reminded me of, you know, with even the whole psychology thing. So
yeah.
I remember one time I was, again, referred back into the services, and the waiting list for outpatient treatment was so long that my consultant asked me, she said, oh, look, you've done psychology. She said, can you give therapy to yourself? And I actually was just in disbelief. This was a consultant psychiatrist asking someone crying out for help, like a service user, if they could give themselves therapy because the resources weren't there for them to do it. And that kind of, for me, kind of sums up the how under-resourced the services are.
Yeah, and I would have thought, and Roisin, come in on this, please. I would have thought with a balance, they say, inter alia, they're saying there's 3.94 million unspent remains fully available to invest in specialist ED posts. Now, have either of you participated in research? Has anyone?
I have.
Who's that, Roisin?
Yeah, I've done like a bit of research when I was living in London.
You did it yourself?
No, Ona was, and I participated in like
great. Okay.
Research other people were doing.
And what was that like, Roisin? Was that at all helpful or?
Well, not necessarily. Like, for me, I didn't really get anything out of it. But in terms of, like, applying, like my own experience, like having that maybe help somebody else.
Yeah,
like, I don't mind.
Yeah. That's a brilliant way to look at it.
I also kind of think that it's important that, like, specialists are more aware of, like, atypical eating disorder behaviours because they're usually the most dangerous ones.
Okay.
And so, like, if that helps, like a professional maybe, like, be more aware of, like, a behaviour they wouldn't have known about before, like, I'm happy to kind of give that, like, help.
But I'm just coming off the back of both of you saying, both of you have, are studying, well, Aoife is obviously, you've graduated in psychology, have you, Aoife? Is Aoife there? I think she has. I think she actually has a PhD. And Roisin, you're studying.
Sorry, yeah, Joe, I'm here. Yeah. The line cut out there.
Okay, you graduated in psychology.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
And did you do a PhD?
I did, yeah.
In what?
Psychology.
No, but in what aspect of it?
Oh, mine was, so it was a research PhD. It wasn't clinical psychology, so it wasn't around kind of like mental health or anything. It was more kind of human personality.
And
really,
behaviour and all that. Yeah, okay. And do you find, Aoife and Roisin, do you find talking about it like this, or sorry, generally, forget about like this, as if, do you find talking about it at all helpful, Aoife?
For me, I suppose sometimes it's such a lonely world, and it is my whole world. So every now and then, just kind of saying to somebody, like, this is what I'm doing to myself, is a bit cathartic. But generally, no, because the things that I do to myself are so severe sometimes that I think
people, it just makes people feel powerless and helpless. So yeah. I then feel, sure, look, why, you know, why would I share it if no one can do anything? But it's a very, it's a really lonely world when it's just you and you're doing all these things and you can't, you don't know how to stop it yourself.
But it's not just you.
Yeah, that's it.
And Roisin, the same question to you.
I personally, I think people, when I feel a bit like almost crazy when I tell people what I go through, because they kind of look at me like, why would you do that? Like, my logical mind sometimes is like, oh, why would I do that to myself? But I don't find talking about it helps, because it's a bizarre way of living when you think about it. And there's no way to really for other people to make sense of it. And they can't, like, they, I know that a lot of people, like, they, like, I have an amazing support system, like an incredible, my family and friends are amazing, but like they can't, there's so much of this disease that like there's so much secrecy. It's hard to be fully honest as well, because there's so much shame around it. So that's another thing. I feel like if I were to be honest and talk about it, it's more helpful, but it's hard to be honest for me.
Okay, it's an education. Laura, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe, how are you?
You were the Aoife's friend. Aoife's not her real name, but you were. Why did you contact us about Aoife? How long have you known each other? Tell us that.
Well, I've known Lisa pretty much my whole life, but I just decided that we had to kind of do something about it. And I think when she came to me saying that she was ready to do the next step, we just had to go forward. She struggled for so long that it's the best part of her life, and we believe that inpatient treatment is the only thing that's going to save her and help her. Things have gotten so severe now, and she's just such an amazing, strong, incredible person that, like, I mean, how she's still fighting this battle every day is incredible. And she's just so highly intelligent and so much to offer, and we just hope that this and all the awareness can just bring that help that's needed.
Well, it's. Would you, Aoife and Laura? You've all the energy of a campaign that you're running, Aoife and Laura together. On the one hand, you've all this energy and focus of and. Elegance in terms of the language and the way you're describing this awful, awful illness that can affect anybody. Does the fact that it's almost becoming a campaign, Aoife, does that help you in the sense that when you wake up in the morning, and I know it's not as simple as this, but do you wake up with a passion to try and educate people about what you're going through?
Yeah, like I can say, to be honest, Joe, like this started a week ago today now, and this past week has been the first time since, like, I can't even remember that I didn't think about ending my life every single minute of the day. It's really given me just a focus. I have, the fight seems to be back, which I had totally, the fight was just gone completely. And it's just given me something to really kind of throw everything into. I don't know if it will work. I don't know if I'll ever get better. I don't know if I'll survive it, to be honest. But it's something anyway, you know, it's just something to focus on.
You're educating so many people today, and Roisin as well. Roisin, how do you feel when you hear Aoife say that she had the passion she has at the moment? And it's really important, they say. I was reading psychiatrist Brendan Keddie's book at the weekend, and that's one of the things he said, try and be passionate, and just strikes me. And Roisin, is it the same for you? Have you, when you wake up in the morning, what's your feeling?
I would be kind of similar to Aoife recently. It's actually funny, because I was really struggling throughout, like, the winter months of the pandemic and stuff. I think with the kind of hope of, like, you know, the nights getting longer and that has a significant impact on my mood and my motivation. Like, I've realised that, like, there's going to be a time past this where I can spend time with my family and my friends, and I want that for myself. And I think my fight is back, definitely. Like, just considering, like, there's more hope now. Just in terms of, like, the pandemic, I think it was a really dark time, and I think it's hell for someone with an eating disorder to be left without structure in their day.
Okay.
I think structure is my main motivation.
Yeah. It's a real, the knock-on effect of this pandemic and so many aspects of our lives is just incalculable at this stage. Róisín Doyle, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Aoife, thank you so much. And Laura as well. Look after each other. And I know Laura and Aoife are friends, and there's no point in me saying stay close, because you will stay close. Thankfully, I sense from listening to the two of you. And Róisín, you have a close group around you as well. And
Joe, could I just say one last thing, if that's okay?
Yeah, of course.
Some family members are kind of saying, like, look, let's try a GoFundMe, and because the cost of the treatment is 60,000, it's really the last thing I want to do. I really don't want to do it. So what we're trying to do now is just ask people to email PDs and just to try and get a bit of momentum that way, but I really don't want to go down the crowdfunding route.
Okay, good. Well said. Okay, Aoife, Laura, and Róisín Doyle. Thank you all.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.